Welcome back to The Amazing Case, the Emergency Medicine and Critical Care Podcast. Each episode, we'll be interviewing clinicians to bring you real-life emergency medicine cases. The Amazing Case is hosted by EMD, Deakin University's ED Special Interest Group. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the EMD podcast. My name is Candace Schultz and I'm a third year medical student. And I am joined here today with the fabulous Callum Davey, a current emergency medicine intern. Welcome, Callum.
Hey, nice to meet you and thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. So we're taking a bit of a different spin today on the podcast. Typically, we've always had an amazing case that's been presented, something that's been really interesting, that's been seen in the emergency department. But with the current climate with COVID-19 happening and everything, we wanted to have a bit of a different spin today and get the perspective from the junior side of things. So being a new doctor, you were a fourth year medical student last year, and how what you've experienced in the emergency department has been.
Okay, yeah. So I guess I should preface this by saying on our first day coming into the emergency department, we had a big pre-brief just to let us all know what's going on, what the expectations were. And the consultants have come through and said, for this rotation, with the start of all the COVID-19, coronavirus, social restriction kind of stuff going on, this is going to be an experience unlike any other intern experience. So people for the last 50, 60 years won't experience this. And hopefully people for the next 50, 60 years won't experience this. In this window of time right now, you guys are going to see things done in a way that haven't been done before. You're going to have experiences of working that potentially might be, yeah, something that we may have experienced like 200 years ago before the advent of modern medicine. Thankfully, a lot of, I guess, the horror stories that we were expecting haven't kind of come out through that, but still been quite an interesting time with a lot of challenges and a lot of difficulties, but ultimately very rewarding.
So what have you actually seen in the difference from last year being a medical student and now with the COVID-19 happening?
Yeah, well, I guess in a very boring infrastructure sense, we've got different areas set up which are meant to deal with different patients. And obviously with suspected COVID-19 patients, there's a lot of restrictions around protective equipment, what kind of interactions you're meant to have with the patients, and making sure that we keep the community safe at large. Because obviously if, as a doctor, I go in to see somebody and I'm not wearing proper PPE and I go see another patient, I pass it on to them, they go home because all they had was a thumb that needs to be sewn up, and then they go pass it on to their family, go to the shopping centre. It becomes quite a big deal. So that kind of, that thought process, that consideration about how we see patients, where are we going to place them, how are we going to treat them, is everything that we're doing important, has been like quite a big change from last year. I think that's probably the big change from an infrastructure sense. But personally, there's a lot more responsibility. So as a student, your responsibility is to learn, and you get a great environment to do so. Patients are very generous with their time. Doctors are very generous with their time. But as a doctor, even as a kind of a lowly intern level where you've got to check everything off anyway, you've just got to be, a little bit more mindful that this patient's come in quite a vulnerable situation, that they're relying on you to provide them care in that situation, and you've got to take that responsibility seriously.
What is that feeling like? I feel like that would be petrifying.
Yeah, well, I guess it's not for everybody, and as you guys would know, as students coming through, I think you make an undertaking or make a commitment to putting the community's needs first and having a lot of care and consideration for those people. So I think that's it attracts the right kind of people to begin with. If you're looking for like a glamorous job where people just love you and there's no responsibility, then medicine's probably not something that you're drawn to. And sometimes it can be quite interesting, quite rewarding, and sometimes you can feel a bit underwhelmed. I think it's okay for people to say that now. I think once upon a time there was this idea that like doctors and medical professionals don't really admit to doubt or kind of feelings of inadequacy. But I think now that people are a bit more open about it, yeah, we're happy to discuss those things and realise that, yeah, a lot of us are often in the same boat when we get confronted with situations where we perhaps need a bit of help with or don't quite understand.
Have you experienced like a lot of doubt this year?
I wouldn't say a lot of doubt. I think especially at Geelong Hospital, we've got quite a good team, quite a strong team of consultants and registrars who are very focused on providing good support and, really nurturing and encouraging junior doctors like myself and other interns and residents to feel like we can approach them with questions, to make sure that we can formulate our own plans and get a sense of how to manage these patients with a bit of a safety net, which I think is really important. But I think sometimes you do run into those patients which aren't quite your run-of-the-mill patient. And you do wonder, is there something wrong with me or my preparation when you can't quite hit the right path straight away? Not everything is always easy to go, okay, this person's presenting like this and this is a textbook definition for this condition. I know what to do. Sometimes people are a bit complex, a bit undifferentiated, and that can be a bit of a challenge to kind of integrate into how you approach your workday.
Have you ever felt like get that horrible imposter syndrome?
Oh, so that is something that I think everybody deals with every day. Whether it overwhelms people or not, I'm not quite sure. I know that sometimes, even when I'm doing a great job, I do think maybe you'd be better suited with a different doctor who's just like a little bit smarter, a little bit more switched on, or had a little bit more sleep last night, or whatever. So I think it's a fine line between somebody who, I guess, has that doubt in themselves and somebody who uses that doubt to try and make sure that they're providing the best level of care and trying to improve themselves every day. I think if you're satisfied with what you're doing every day, it might show that perhaps you're not trying hard enough to be better. You don't have to criticise yourself, but you want to do the best job possible for the community.
Yeah, so the doubt can actually help you be a better doctor.
Yeah, as long as you can control it properly. And I think that's what I was talking about before. We've got a really, really good team across the road who check in constantly, looking after people's mental health. It's when that doubt becomes overwhelming and gets into anxiety and stuff like that. I think that's not as useful, but a little bit of healthy anxiety improves performance sometimes. So
crossing your T's and dotting your I's
kind of thing. Exactly right.
And what have you found to be like the most challenging?
I think I actually reflected on this the other day, and I think it's creating a level of comfort in being uncomfortable. And I know that sounds strange, but I think in any area of life, we're going to encounter situations where we don't feel comfortable, whether that's because we haven't seen it before, we don't feel like we've got the knowledge to deal with it, don't feel like we've got the skills to deal with this situation. It's going to create a level of discomfort. And it's okay to be uncomfortable. And I think that's something that one of my ED supervisors across the road kind of really helped me out with, was saying it's okay not to know something. It's not okay just to throw your hands up and walk away, but it's okay not to know something. Say, I'm going to stick here. You're in quite a vulnerable situation as a patient, but I'm here to help you, and I'm going to do to the best of my ability to do that. And when I'm not sure, I'm going to talk to people who might have those skills and that knowledge that I lack right now, to make sure that you get the best care possible. And everybody is really approachable and respectful of that kind of attitude, I think. But as a student, I think you come up through the ranks and you think, if I've got all the information, if I read all the books, if I read all the lectures, take all the notes, then I'll know everything I need to know. And unfortunately, as much as we'd love to think that's the case, it's not. You'll always run into something you don't know, and that's okay.
I feel also just being a medical student now in the first clinical year, you definitely get a sense that there's this entire other curriculum you have to learn, from how to deal with a patient to how a hospital runs, how to interact with people. That's certainly not something you learn from lectures or textbooks. It's just that life experience that you kind of come across in the hospital.
Yeah, they talk about that hidden curriculum a lot, I think. I like to think of that as just being a decent, genuine person. And I think if people see that you care, that when you come to work, you're going to work 100% and give everybody everything that you've got in terms of energy, attention, concentration, that people respond to that. And I think that goes across the entire team. Like, I think sometimes people forget that hospitals aren't just doctors. It is nurses, allied health staff, administrative staff. It takes everybody working together and having a level of respect. I think respect's the key word for those different roles to make sure that we can look after patients and make everything run smoothly and hopefully help people feel better and not have to come back to hospital in the future.
Yeah, and you can definitely see that when you're wandering around the wards and everything. People who provide a lot of respect or bubbliness as well, happiness to the ward, it's received so much better amongst the entire team, and you can tell the difference between a very cohesive team and a team that's not. And that's often due to respect between each other and things. Definitely have noticed that for sure.
Yeah, and it's not to say that everybody needs to be an extrovert or everybody needs to be positive all the time, but I think a friendly hello and a kind word and just asking if people are okay goes a long way. And I think those are things that are easy to forget when you're working a 14-hour shift and you're really tired and hungry and haven't been to the bathroom or whatever. But if you can do that, then I think people respond to it nicely. I'm glad that you're seeing that across the road, because I think that's something that Geelong Hospital tries to do really well.
Yeah, I agree. They definitely do it well. Now, we were talking before about a bit of an interesting story and how when you meet certain patients or a certain scenario will happen, how it can change your thought process on something you might have previously had a different thought on. Could you explain that to us?
Yeah, well, I guess the emergency department, it's kind of unique in some respects. Emergency medicine's kind of unique in some respects because you never know what's coming through the door. And sometimes it's going to be that straightforward kind of case where you know what's happening, you feel confident, you can talk to your seniors, see this patient and get them out the door pretty quickly. I had one of those the other night where a young girl was with her partner and they were trying to recreate a challenge that they'd seen on social media. And halfway through the challenge, unfortunately, the partner dropped the girl on her head and split her eye open. So obviously you kind of clear all the head injury things, you have a look at the laceration on the eyebrow, have a talk to the seniors, stitch it up, patch it closed, give some good advice, and then they can go home. And that kind of feels rewarding because it's like, here's the problem, here's the solution, these are the steps I'm going to take to go through it. And it's kind of like a clean presentation that's wrapped up in a nice little package. And sometimes that gets, I guess, juxtaposed against a complex, undifferentiated patient. And this is one that I had immense difficulty with and had to have a chat with some senior colleagues about as well. So I had a female who was 20 weeks gestation, IV pregnancy. She dipped into her super to kind of conceive, and she presented with chest pain. Acute onset, no precipitating factors. Nothing in the history was kind of pointing in any direction. And so there's a lot of things going through my head. And obviously you treat every patient the same, but when you hear a story of a social background of somebody who perhaps has invested a lot of resources, time and energy into conceiving a pregnancy, you place a lot of importance on that for that patient. Not that any patient's any more or less important than anybody else, but like, I think subconsciously you feel like, I don't want to let this person down. So you go through and just go through like a nice systems base. Let's see what we can ask. Let's see what kind of comes up. And you go through musculoskeletal, nothing. Cardiac, nothing. Respiratory, nothing. Gastrointestinal, nothing. Like just going through neurological, nothing. Absolutely nothing's coming up on this kind of background. So we're like, okay, well, nothing's coming up. What do we do now? Okay, well, let's do some investigations. Let's see if we can add a little bit of information that perhaps the patient can't provide. ECG is coming back clear. Bloods are coming back clear. Everything's... there's nothing that's contributing to figuring out what's going on with this patient. The fact that she's got this pain. This pain's very real. It was cyclical. Sometimes pleuritic, sometimes not. But like going up to 10 out of 10. And it's impacting her. And you start thinking, okay... It's none of the big red flags that we get taught about in medical school to look out for. So that's reassuring in some way. But it's none of the common things that we get taught to look out for in medical school either. So that's less reassuring. So you start to see where this level of discomfort comes in. Okay, so what are the things that I'm missing that could be contributing to this woman's presentation? And it gets a little bit more complicated because we gave her some pain relief on presentation. Just some paracetamol, she responds to it. Later on, the pain persists through oxycodone, persists through morphine. And it's real pain, it's evolving pain, so you're thinking what kind of process is going on here. It starts becoming associated with her breathing patterns, and then it doesn't seem to be associated with her breathing patterns. So like it becomes quite complex. And I think at this stage, I've talked to my consultant who's come to have a look at her. Not quite sure. Talked to a reg as well who's interested in women's health. Wasn't quite sure. They've gone to talk to a second consultant who's come through. We decided to do some more investigation, some ultrasound. Let's look for clots. Let's look for other things that might be causing it. Nothing there. Let's talk to another consultant. I'm like, oh, we're not quite figuring out what's going on here. None of us feel comfortable or confident seeing this woman home. Because this pain's real. It's a situation where you don't want to make a mistake. But there's not a clear-cut diagnosis. There's not a clear-cut solution to this problem. So unlike the eye where we can just stitch up and send home, there's no neat bow here. So in the end, we admitted her overnight to the short-stay unit. And we're like, okay, we've done all the things that we can do right now. We're... just going to see if time helps us out. We've got a little bit of time. We can meet her overnight and see what the thoughts are. And I won't lie. So I finished up work maybe at about 1 a.m. that night. And I was up till maybe about 4:30 in the morning thinking about this patient, wondering what I'd missed out on, like looking up all the kind of weird and wonderful zebras of the world of like of what might be causing this chest pain. And I think perhaps if the pregnancy wasn't involved or the IVF wasn't involved, it might have been a little bit easier. But you start thinking, okay, so what are some obstetric causes of this kind of presentation or what's going on? Like the human body does a lot of weird things. It does even more weird things when you're pregnant. So like any of these weird things going to contribute to this presentation? What information haven't I learned in the last like years of my life that would help me right now if I just knew it?
Yeah.
What have I missed out on learning throughout all of medical school, throughout like the early part of my intern year, that can help me right now? Yeah. And I was thinking, there's something wrong with me, with my knowledge base. I'm deficient in this way. And I think getting rid of that feeling is going to be important going forward, because that's not a healthy feeling. It's not a healthy feeling to think that you're deficient. It's healthy to think I want to do my best. And so that wasn't really a good night of sleep. I came in the next morning and my fingers were crossed, because I said to her, last thing I said to her before I went home was, it's been lovely talking to you. I hope you're going okay, but I hope I never see you again when I come tomorrow morning. And then I come to work the next day and she's still there. She's still on the ward. She's been seen by another consultant, another registrar. Nobody has any idea. The gynae team, ops team, don't have any idea what's going on. So she's just kind of rumbling along with this persistent pain that's evolving and changing and can't be pinned down quite anywhere. All the investigations are coming back negative. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be seeing all my other patients. I'm going to come back and check on you every so often, see what we can do, try and figure it out. See if kind of meeting you again, talking through a few other things is going to spring something in my mind that will help me figure out the clear solution, because everybody's got a solution. Like, you do medicine or you figure out anything because there's always a reason why something happens. Well, I found out there's not always a reason. I think that was the big kind of evolution here. So she stayed in another night, nobody having any idea. After about 56 hours in the hospital, so I saw her the next time I came in as well. Her pain was controlled enough with pain relief. We ruled off enough red flags. We talked through enough conditions to establish what she didn't have that we felt like it was okay to send her home with advice to come back. Which is quite a scary thing to send somebody home saying, look, we've done everything we can here. We've asked all the questions we can. We've done all the investigations we can. We don't have a reason why you've got this presentation, this pain. All we've done is established that it's not immediately life-threatening to you right now. It's not going to be threatening to your pregnancy right now. Here are some reasons to come back in. Like, obviously, we're sorry that we couldn't identify the cause of your pain, this presentation, today. But what we've done is look after you and make sure that you're going to be okay. And you can come back in anytime. And so, like, having that conversation at the end was pretty tough, pretty difficult. Because that's the opposite of, like, a nice little presentation with a little bow that you can present to the patient, the patient's family, or whatever. It's messy. It's kind of unsatisfying to go home at the end of the day thinking, this patient came in and they were in a really vulnerable, scared state. And whilst I did a lot of things to make sure that I gave them the best care that I could possibly give, in the end, it wasn't enough. And then talking to my consultant afterwards and just reflecting on that, giving your best level of care is actually enough. Caring about that patient to go in and check on them every so often, even though they're not your patient anymore on different shifts, that's enough. You don't have to find a solution for everybody. You just have to be able to care. And sometimes that care will lead to a solution. Sometimes it won't. But that patient will know that they feel valued by the healthcare system. You'll feel better because you'll know that you've done the best that you can. And hopefully if something like that pops up again and you find an answer or a solution, you kind of build that into your medical knowledge. And the next time that patient presents, then you go like, this is the path I'm going to go down. So yeah, sorry, that wasn't a great story, but...
A great story. It's really interesting to hear, because I guess that's when you're a medical student, that's exactly what you're expecting, is that someone's going to come in with something, you can fix it, all done, you know, finished off with your little bow and on their merry way, and then you'll get these cases that, well, you don't know. You don't know what to do.
Yeah, I won't lie. Like, I don't love it for the patient, but it's a lot more reassuring as a doctor or for the department when somebody comes in and they've got a clear-cut appendicitis or they've got a clear-cut bowel obstruction, because you go, okay, this is how I'm going to work this patient up. This is the solution that we've found. This is the pathway to finding a solution for that patient to be out of hospital, to be fixed, inverted commas, or whatever. So when you don't have that kind of clear-cut pathway, as a junior doctor, speaking from my own experience, I find that quite difficult. And it sounds like that's a feeling that persists for a while, but you become more and more comfortable in that discomfort, more and more comfortable feeling uncomfortable.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. Is there any final advice you would give to our juniors out there?
To medical students, for sure. I think the driving force behind being a good doctor is just having an interest in what's going on around you and actually caring about people. So it's anybody can read a textbook, anybody can take notes. You can bring somebody off the street to ask a history. So it's about putting all those elements together to be a good doctor. So you've got to care about the patient, build that rapport. So they'll be able to tell you things. And then the things that they tell you get combined with all that information that you've read in textbooks, all those patients that you've seen on the wards, all those jobs that you've done for senior colleagues to get a little bit of bedside teaching throughout your clinical years. And that's what makes a good doctor, right there, is the idea that you can put all these things together with the human side to give people, I guess, good medical care in what's a really vulnerable time in their lives. Because you, I think at the end of the day, I try and remind myself that I might be seeing 20, 30 patients in a day. And as much as I try, sometimes those patients will kind of blend into each other. I won't have like great recall of everybody. But for a lot of these people who are coming in, the patients, you might be one of two doctors or three doctors that they see for that entire time. So they're going to remember everything that you say. They're going to remember everything you do. They're going to remember the dignity and respect that you treated them with, or didn't treat them with if you were a bit cranky or whatever. So just reminding yourself every time, like, this is important to this person. They're going to remember this. How do I want them to remember me? How do I want them to remember their hospital stay? I think if you can do that, and at the end of the day, feel positive about how these people are going to feel about what potentially might be one of the worst days of their lives, then you can go home and sleep well.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Really good.